This is CliffCentral.com.
Hey, welcome to the Futurology Show right here on Cliff Central. Brett Lindsay at the helm today with my mate Brett Sinclair.
Hello, matey. How are you doing, pal?
Good on you, bro.
It's so good to be here.
Yes. No Mike again, though, today.
No Mike. I think Mike's been looking for my squirrel. Right?
And when he finds it, he's going to rock that.
He's going to rock that squirrel. I tell you what, you know what I'm impressed about Mike? He's clearly got his shirt on again.
Oh, really?
He's getting into that bad habit
Does
of taking his shirt off
know
in studio.
About this, though?
Does it? Oh, God.
I think there's a meme coming.
So. There is a meme.
Beware, my cow, and if you're not here again,
Naya,
buddy.
Naya, we've already made the meme.
We made the meme. It's not public yet.
What do we say? Mike has a chest for podcasting.
He does. He's the original mic drop.
He's the mic drop.
Just he dropped his shirt. So if you're listening to us, you're on beautiful. The Futurology Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Futurology Show. And if you'd like to see the meme,
you got
Mike
it right. You got it right.
Or,
you see, I'm not going to let you off on that one.
Hashtag mic drop. And
what Mike said.
You what Mike said. If you want them, then I think we might be encouraged or persuaded to share that photo. So Mike Cowan.
It just requires a number of tweets and a couple of 5 stars on our podcast.
As well, the iTunes. Yeah, you can follow us on iTunes and Cliff Central. There's all the podcasts exist.
Yeah, and we really chuffed, right? We've got ourselves up into the top South African tech show.
Awesome. Hey, high five, bro.
Yeah, well done,
nice.
Man. And we just thought we spoke a load of shit.
Well, we do, but eventually we get around to some sort of greatness.
No, we do. We do. I mean, today, I think we've got quite an interesting set of guests, right?
Yeah.
Some true South Africans who are trying to change the landscape of artificial intelligence.
Correct. We have the guys from Intellect, Tomislav Ravic. Is that right?
Yes, it is right.
I know, you did well, right?
Good.
I'm quite impressed.
And Rochelle Hubans.
Hubans, yeah.
Excellent. Welcome, guys.
So you did not do well there.
I didn't do well.
You fucked that one.
The one that I was worried about the most, I got right. Sorry, Rochelle. But yeah, thanks, guys. You're from Intellect, and I've got notes about who you are, but it's often best just to ask the guests. So
tell the guests about, I mean, our audience about Intellect, by the way.
Right, so I'll start with myself. I've been a software engineer for probably the last 12 or 13 years, basically working on anything that I can get my hands on. Generally, my role has been, from the beginning, was like architecting small kinds of projects. And as things progressed, I started looking after people. And mainly my role now is not really getting involved in the code side of things, but actually like mentoring, looking after the guys on my team, and then coming up with great ideas.
And how's it been? I mean, mentoring is a challenge, right?
People are difficult. Like software and computers are pretty easy. Yeah. You can just tell it, give it an instruction, and it's going to spit something out. People, on the other hand, have got personalities and emotions.
Damn
and
those personalities.
Things that are happening at a home.
They also spit things out, right?
Sometimes. it's been pretty good. I think the Intellect offer a pretty good space for people that are looking for that kind of career progression.
You guys are everywhere at the moment. Everywhere I see you guys, you're doing some great shows.
Thank you.
Hackathons, Dev Days.
Tell us about those. Fuck.
So I think let's rather go into introducing the show.
Sure, yeah.
Before we get too far into that kind of
stuff. When you say hackathon, we like squirrels. Wow, so hackathons, bring it on.
Let's hack something.
So how's it going?
Cool, yeah. So I'm Rochelle. I've been at Intellect for about 6 years now.
Jeez.
I'm a solutions architect there. So basically that involves helping teams develop solutions in very different industries, different platforms. Also, like Tomislav mentioned, a lot of working with people, working with clients and stakeholders and trying to create their visions and make it come alive.
I mean, you can tell us some client secrets. What are they really like?
They're really cool people.
Yeah.
Oh, God. He was paid to say that.
He's paid to say that.
At least your clients pay.
No, that's awesome. And you're passionate about AI, right?
Yeah. I have a keen interest in it. Yeah. Have for quite a long time. Yeah. Recently, about a year ago, we started the AI ZA meetups. It's held in Cape Town, Joburg, Durban. Just to get people together talking about AI with, again, mini hackathons, learning more about the concepts, the technologies, that kind of stuff. Also, I've got, I guess, an opinionated stance on the topic.
So. Very
we are going to so probe that. And that could be a poke as well. It'll just get you a bit wound up about it then.
Yeah. How artificial is it really?
It's not artificial.
Or how intelligent is it really? These are the questions people ask.
I used to code in COBOL. So there's nothing intelligent about anything
I wrote.
You're
giving away your age.
I know, it's sad. The bank thinks I'm really excited.
That was
please,
invented
please
when? Like 1960, 70?
It doesn't matter when it was invented. It was when it was coded.
You had like a dot matrix screen or something, didn't you?
Dot matrix screen.
It was like pixel points.
I'm just waiting for my screen to refresh.
You ran your command and then practiced your cross stitch in the corner. Yeah, man.
I'd run it overnight and leave it to SysOps. When I got back the next morning, I'd have a stack of paper this high and you'd realize, I left something out in my code.
I've actually got an interesting story. So a former boss of mine used to run like the dot matrix printers at a particular company. And he's quite an avid kind of like gun person. So anyway, it was late night, probably 2-3 o'clock in the morning. He's playing around like James Bond in the office.
With a real gun.
With a real gun. Right?
Because you drink a lot of vodka when you're waiting for that gun.
It was about 2-3 o'clock in the morning and he turns the corner and bam, he actually fired. He shot right through the entire printer.
Oh, no.
And broke everything. And then for the next like hour, he was trying to figure out like how is he going to
tell
people.
Where does the ribbon go?
Yeah, trying to explain to people like how the hell did this actually happen?
You got to then say, you got to own it. You got to go, I thought I was James Bond.
There's no coming back from that with any other story. The truth is better than clever at that point.
He was asserting dominance with the printer.
I think everybody that ever owned a dot matrix printer at some point
wanted to shoot.
Wanted to shoot or club or do something to that flippin' thing. That's brilliant. Beautiful.
So, I mean, I guess on that
very
note,
very cathartic thought that.
Today's topic is artificial intelligence.
Is it though? And is it
that
though?
That was a pop.
Yeah. But is it?
Is it?
Is it?
Is it? Well, that's what we're going to find out today, right? And I think we're also going to, I want to talk a little bit
gamification.
About the impact of gaming in the space, yeah. Right? I mean, I was really impressed with the Mary Meeker report. And when it started kind of looking at, well, gaming drove a whole lot of this kind of advancement in technology. Yeah. And personally, I always thought it was porn. But that's just me, right?
Yeah, well, porn does its part.
It does its
that's
part.
That's why we have 4K screens, as we mentioned.
Correct, correct.
And VR.
Proper
and VR. I mean, yeah. So you can turn around and see the camera dude behind you. Awkward. Awkward.
But I mean, that's beautiful.
The reality of virtual reality.
See, and here I was thinking, and the best part about it was GPUs.
Oh, yeah. Graphic like processing
they
units.
They drove
just in case.
Graphic processing units, which is now your entire world. I mean, the whole world of artificial intelligence is now being pushed through in-memory fucking cards. It's incredible, right?
The technical term. An MFU. An MFC. But you wrote a book. Did you write a whole book? No, you wrote a podcast or a blog.
I wrote a blog article.
Okay. I think in order to just defend myself, I've had a beer.
Or four.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Brett. And I drink beer.
Yeah, me too.
But thank you.
What
guys.
He means by that, by the way, is that we're looking for a beer sponsor.
Yes. So the beer doesn't come free, people, unless you sponsor us. And it's amazing what can happen when you don't drink beer, because you can actually say the word, you wrote a blog article.
Yeah, I guess.
About demystifying the AI.
Yeah, demystifying these buzzwords.
I think that's more important than my beer. Yeah,
AI, machine learning, deep learning. What do these things mean?
So
what does it mean?
Yeah, so look, no pressure. My stance on it is, I guess, a bit philosophical. So
awesome.
In my opinion, intelligence needs to sort of be defined if we can make artificial intelligence. But do we really understand what intelligence is? And that's why very philosophical, right?
That is such a good point, because if Mike was here, he'd be the prime candidate of what intelligence isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's great when he's not, yeah.
For me, intelligence is your ability to navigate the world. So
boom.
That's quite an interesting question, and I want to
hashtag intelligence is navigation.
It could be.
To navigate the world. Like, I don't know where I am, but I know how to find out.
Not exactly like navigating, but like understanding the world, like navigating the world. Yeah. Like, you know, you understand that when someone's on the other side of the door, not to open up the door and bash his face in with it. And then, you know, building up on those kinds of concepts, like
it's the better common sense.
Intelligent people are the guys that understand how the world works and how to navigate within that kind of space.
Yeah, I like it.
I think from a maybe more broader or conceptual level, if we think about intelligence in general. So we consider ourselves as intelligent, as humans. Okay, we're dominant in the world. Yeah, we're intelligent. But other animals, birds, ants, all of these life forms exhibit some sort of perception of intelligence, whether it's with gathering food or, you know, staying safe or whatever it may be.
Trying not to fly into windows.
Yeah, which they do a lot.
Yes.
But if they're in a flock, they probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
So it's the point is, again, it's philosophical. It's not defined. What is intelligence? If there was something more intelligent than us, would we be able to comprehend that based on how we think and how our brains work?
So we had The Future of Sapiens with Brett Lobsher on recently. And if you missed that one, that's a show that will break your brain. Have you ever watched the movie Inception?
Yes.
Did it break your brain? Maybe the second time you watched it, you're like, I realize what's happening now.
Yeah.
That's
the same point, right? It gets to that point of intelligence that just, because we don't understand that intelligence is accelerating so far past us that it's just, what is it now?
Yeah.
It's just gone, right?
And do you think at a certain point, that's where artificial intelligence will help us bridge that gap, where we're like, wow, that's gone really far. Like, it actually needs to dumb down the rate of intelligence to meet us, or is it just going to leave us behind?
So there are three classifications in AI. Okay, so narrow intelligence, it's basically what you see around you right now. Fraud detection, or, you know, you're applying, or chatbots. You're applying artificial intelligence concepts styled in a very
consequential
sort of
algorithms.
Small domain.
Okay.
Yeah. So, or playing chess, right?
Yeah.
Would a chess playing robot know how to make toast?
Yeah.
Unlikely. And that's what brings you into the space of general intelligence, which is us. We can use learnings from a different topic and apply that to a decision you'd make in another topic.
So this is where machine learning kicks in, right? So the AlphaGo example of AlphaGo taking on all those different Go players. Yeah. And I heard something, it was something like a trillion moves or something that you wouldn't be able to build these basic intelligent decision trees that the machine has to learn as it goes to be able to play AlphaGo. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so machine learning is part of it, but that could also still be restricted to something very specific. So machine learning to classify different types of flowers, right? It's a technique used.
Yeah. What is that technique, by the way? And I know it's. I can remember seeing a diagram trying to explain it, but my brain was too slow
to figure it out. So it works heavily on data.
Yeah.
You need data, and usually it's called supervised learning.
That's right.
You need data to guide this algorithm on how to learn and how to classify things. However, you could also use techniques in things like deep learning to go and learn things that may not even be apparent to us.
And that's using neural networking, right?
Yeah.
A bit like our brains are set up in the same kind of way.
It's kind of modeled on our basic understanding of how our brains work.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just thinking about this. So the more data that you have, the more data you can put into the machines, it feels like the business that should be leading this is Google, right? With their knowledge base or the amount of questions, as well as their ability to trawl and index the web, they must be sitting on a serious differentiator that we're probably not quite seeing the use yet. We're seeing it in maybe layers and maps and that kind of, as you said, the very basic stuff. But they must be sitting on just a time bomb of excitement.
Yeah, look, Google are one of the sort of leaders in the space because of all the data they have and their sort of innovative thinking when it comes to this kind of stuff. But still, I don't think it's going to be reaching that level of general intelligence or human-like intelligence anytime soon, at least.
Yeah.
What we were talking about earlier, or a few minutes ago, were about some intelligence that's greater than ours that we might not be able to understand or comprehend. That's the space of super intelligence, and that's a big question mark. We don't know what that could be. It could be human-hating robots that realize we're bad for the planet, or it could be something we can't even
dystopian
understand.
Views of the future.
So I've got a question. So I mean, there's a lot of really crazy amount of work being done in this space in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Now, as a South African organization, I mean, you're setting up the community, which I think is awesome. Get the guys starting to think about how we can apply it.
Yeah.
How do we plan this game as South Africans? I mean, you guys are there. You're writing the code. You're building it for the systems. You must see the requirements coming through.
Yeah.
How do we play as a South African business? I'd love to understand that.
I think the focus is, so there's two approaches. You could go with the typical sort of, I have a business problem, and how can we use AI techniques to solve this problem, right? A lot of businesses or companies want to do things because it's the buzzword.
Would you say that's about a majority of the companies? Because that's what I'm getting. Right. Somebody's like, I want an AI app that has Bitcoin and blockchain attached to it. Can I have it in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I don't want to spend more than 15,000 rand.
Funny you mention that. I've been waiting for you. I've got one of those on the shelf. Don't do that. If you're a client, don't phone me like that. I'm not going to give you that.
I'm just going to edit out the part that says, just don't phone me.
No, phone me. But phone me with a solution. Because there's a difference, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a difference. Yeah. And the current state of solutions, you talk about people with buzzwords, the intelligence of what technology is able to do versus what we're able to solve by using technology is very different. This technology-led thinking versus design-led thinking. And if you're constantly relying on technology to solve all your problems because that's the only technology you know rather than trying to solve the actual problem, you're in a problem.
Exactly.
There's a trouble. Yeah. And I think AI is in a space where it's going to help people identify, this is the solution, this is the technology that we should be using.
Yeah.
So sorry to interrupt, but
I'm glad you mentioned that because the second sort of approach has a lot to do with design thinking. Because I feel like that emergent behavior in artificial intelligence is very much similar to how you'd approach a problem in the design thinking space.
Yeah.
You form goals. You don't only look at your sort of existing landscape. You look at what are the possibilities. What do I need to invent?
Yeah. How can I approach
this differently? Yeah. Rather forming a goal and working towards that than saying I have a problem and we need to solve it. So I feel like if a business wants to start using artificial intelligence concepts, they either have a pain point that they can address with it, or they need to get all of their data together, cleanse that data, and find trends and find insights.
You've just hit a gripe of mine, right? Because to get the organizations with their legacy infrastructures to get the data into a point where they can use it.
That's been qualified,
I'm saying it as a bank. It feels like the bank. We've been running single view programs of a customer for years, right? And I think the reason why is that this data is continuously moving. The systems keep on moving. Yeah. The inputs keep on moving. The shape of the data keeps on moving. So every time you move it into a data warehouse and go, I think I've got a pointer to it, it's just accelerated. It's quite a challenge.
By the time you have a single view,
it's not easy, right?
The person's moved on.
They need to be figured again.
Yes. True. Sorry, Richard.
We keep having
this. That kind of summarizes it. I mean, if you want to approach it, you can't say, remember when mobile sort of became a big buzzword. Like, I want a mobile app with the side of responsiveness and, some sync, please.
Yeah. A dot Mobi side, please.
Yeah. So, I mean,
but can we start with a light version and just let people buy the full version after we've launched the light version? Because we're not actually sure what the full version is going to be yet.
Yeah.
Or what the light version is.
Kill me.
So that's what we need to try to avoid. Yes. Look at AI as a buzzword and say, we as a business are now doing AI.
Something that Rochelle and I were talking about earlier today was a lot of companies are looking at AI to solve problems, but they should be also looking at what opportunities could actually arise from artificial intelligence. So not just looking at this is my immediate problem, but where can we actually take this and what could we offer the world by using this kind of technology to better it?
Two things. There's machine learning, AI. Dispel the difference.
So, I think it's a component of the discipline, right?
Yeah, so the way I view it is artificial intelligence encompasses many techniques, and machine learning is just one of those techniques.
Okay. So we've had a bunch of discussions around IoT sensors, all the data, interpreted machine learning. Well, and where does AI actually sit in this? Because now we've got machine learning. It's giving us information based on information. So I know that this happens, here's a trend. If this happens again, then I'm assuming the trend has taught me that this is where it will go. How does AI actually play a part? And is there anything more interpreted in a space? And I'm talking about like automated homes of the future. I drive my car to home and I've got my Waze working and it's going to tell my house that I'm on my way and I like my bath at a certain temperature and it's got to be poured and then it's going to...
Are you a bather?
No, I'm not. I'm just, okay. It's the easiest thing. A bit weird to start pouring you a shower while I'm in traffic. I'm like, yeah. Save the planet one drop of water at a time by pouring showers.
This is not a solution for Cape Town.
No, no, not at all. Well, maybe after the storm, but...
Fill your bucket.
Yes, fill your bucket. No, I'm just saying, like, this is kind of this... There's this utopian view that the humans get to do less because everything's more convenient due to something or someone else doing the thinking. And maybe we can focus on things more hedonistic than, you know, work because machine learning's helping us, AI is helping us. But how real does AI get on a contextual level for humans?
I think just to elaborate on what you just said, that's also a big fear that artificial intelligence or automation kills jobs. And
I believe
some people aren't happy about that, right? But look back, the Industrial Revolution, that's created jobs that didn't exist before that. So we wouldn't be able to really understand what jobs would be possible or what we could possibly do once it actually happens.
We're just going to keep pushing the red button every 10 minutes. The AI will find a place for us.
Don't push the red button. Ah, damn it.
Well, let's look at something a bit more tangible. So digital advertising, search engine optimization agencies.
Yeah.
They wouldn't exist without the internet. But the internet also eliminated the need for other industries like newspapers.
Yeah, you're right. And so, you know what? The artificial intelligence is probably going to eliminate the need for SEO agencies, right?
Or journalists.
Or journalists. Or fake news generated from artificial intelligence. Gupta.com.
So, I mean, things like IBM Watson's able to like search and trawl the web for current trends and news and stuff via Twitter and social media, all types of social media, and actually put together some sort of contextual article that says, so this is actually what's happening based on what you said. And it's pretty close to what actually happened.
It's
impressive. And it wasn't there. It didn't have an eyewitness, but it searched what was available.
Yeah. I think that's interesting because, like, the whole concept of AI and machine learning and deep learning, it sounds so complex to the average person and even to sort of professionals in the engineering industry, software engineering industry. It's, you know, it sounds like something that you could never get involved in because it's so difficult.
Yeah.
But at its core, it's purely data science. It's working with data. These concepts have been around for decades.
I mean, even the algorithms are getting pretty standard, right?
Yeah.
There's a set of algorithms that can do pattern analysis.
Exactly.
Great. Okay. Yeah. How do we use those pattern analysis algorithms?
Artificial intelligence isn't really a new thing. It's just that there's now so much data available that you could actually do something intelligent in inverted commas from that data.
It's both the data and computing power.
Yeah.
I think
this kind of platform trends that are folding out that's enabling the next platform to roll out.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. I think the third factor is business opportunity. So we have the data. There's been this big data boom in the last, say, half a decade or so. We've got really great computing and realized GPUs are great for these sort of algorithms. And now we're seeing business opportunity in using artificial intelligent concepts and algorithms. And I think a lot of people think it's something very new. And although it might be used in some new ways now, a lot of the premise around it is old.
I find that a lot with the new technologies. I mean, you mentioned design thinking. I mean, I advocate for design thinking a lot. Part of it,
you and design thinking and nanobots.
No, love them all. I think they're all the same at some point.
They probably are.
But the methodology of design thinking is the sprint, the rapid prototyping, the validating ideas, divergent thinking. So let's throw all the options on the table and then let's see which ones are the best and then let's go for that one. But AI in rapid validation, let's not say rapid prototyping, rapid validation of ideas, you throw it into an AI cycle and say, look, extrapolate this. What would happen based on the knowledge you have for the if it was 5 years from now? Like, what do the trends look like? Is that sort of AI computing that we can start to use maybe even today? We say, we know all this information, interpret it, and then just go for it.
Yeah. I think currently AI is great at making predictions given the right set of data and
super
enough
brute
data. So
super
you could possibly...
I'd really like a hand.
You could crack it.
I'm coming stone last.
Well, my wife was in the top 1% in the one
year. What?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
It was just anyway, sidetracks. Or...
No, squirrels, she's better at the commentary than the commentators most of the time. Yeah, it's quite impressive.
It,
yeah, no, it's great.
Damn. Yeah, I was supposed to, I was totally emasculated when first time we were watching rugby. I was like, woohoo, this is cool, go Sharks. And she was a Bull supporter, but she was like, everything was right. Oh, shit. Look, this crossing coming in the side. Yeah, and not going in the thing. Like, this is awesome. And she likes garlic, so we got married. It was awesome. But yeah, sorry. That was a proper squirrel.
You just got me thinking now, like, why are we not using artificial intelligence for figuring out betting and sports betting and odds and that kind of stuff? Like, if you look at the American baseball system, they started putting together teams based off of statistics and so forth. Like, it would be quite a
good way of writing. We've actually been approached by people.
Yeah.
We've been approached by a couple of people in a betting gambling sport.
Okay.
To do with, I'm just going to say horses.
Like squirrel racing.
Squirrel racing. I love it. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
It's not horses. Forget I said that. Squirrel racing. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of information, like historical information about jockeys and their weights and the speed at which they were running and the track that they were in as they came around different bends. And I mean, talk about statistics. Horse racing and that type of sport is probably one of the most statistical in terms of the amount of information you have available to you. Mm. But there's no real application of any sort of interpretation of that data. Somebody still has to go back through ledgers and Excel spreadsheets and stuff that existed 20 years ago, or past the 5 years, to try and interpret what might happen in the future.
Well, there you go, job creation. You could get someone to actually put that data into a system.
Exactly. And that's the thing. So, but what AI is able to do is say, this jockey doesn't ride anymore. That horse doesn't exist anymore. It's now glue and he's retired. But there is a new jockey who's the same weight. There is a horse that is the same type of pedigree, same age. It's going to go through there. And like that for me is where I see artificial intelligence. Yeah. It's about linking the fact that there are similarities in data fields and saying, perhaps, maybe.
But that's the thing. It will also discover trends or relations between the data that you're not aware of. As a person looking at it, the algorithm can find some relation in two pieces of data that's actually a really meaningful connection between them that we would have overlooked.
And it does it in an instant.
Yeah.
Well, take the stock exchange, right? So it's actually
That's the real gamble.
Guy who's in Silicon Valley, and I, just for the life of me, I'm trying to remember the site, and I'll tweet it when I remember it. And what he's done is he's built this community, a bit like Kaggle. And what Kaggle is you get a bunch of data scientists in, you do a lot of algorithms for our audience. But he's done this for a bunch of algorithms that are being open sourced, and he already has over 12,000 data scientists all contributing with different algorithms. So his thinking is, let's open source and scale the generation of the algorithm. So at the moment, we rely on the algorithm to make sense of the volume of data. But what we actually need to do is build billions of algorithms that might all be doing the same thing, but they're iterating and making it a hell of a lot better. But like old Ray Kurzweil's law of what's
the singularity.
What is it? Law of acceleration.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you take software and you take the latest software and you build something even better, make it even better. So you get that exponential effect, but he's taking it to the algorithm play in an open source manner. Mm. I thought it was brilliant. So I'll find the name of the company, I'll post it.
I have a question for the intellect guys. Mm. What are some of the more interesting uses of AI technology and some of the things you find really amazing in today's market within South Africa? Mm. Mm. If you're allowed to name clients, great. Otherwise, just some sort of use cases that we can chat about.
Mm. I don't think I'm going to mention any clients, but in the agricultural space, there's a lot of work going there because, I mean, it's very scientific. Mm.
Yeah.
It's chemical
empirical
compositions
data.
In soil. It's what, you know, land nutrition,
value, just
plants
land value alone,
need.
Which you could figure out, eh?
Yeah. So there's some work that we've done in that space.
Do you do you count things like weather forecasting and trends and weather?
It all plays a part
like
in it.
At the moment.
That's the thing. Even the water composition of the water in the soil. And what are the requirements for a specific plant? You know, things like that. Finance space, fraud detection. It's been used a lot to find sort of, like you were mentioning, similarities in data. Mm. And if something kind of seems fraudulent, it's able to detect that pretty accurately.
Yeah. So what I find interesting is, because you need lots of data, right? It's just like the perfect partner with IoT. So the more sensors that we can get out there. And I think it, like I've gone to a couple of IoT conferences where the guys are all passionate about the smog network that they talk about, edge computing. And they talk about the types of data kind of plans that are out there that are evolving and the types of networks. They talk about the sensors and the connectivity and the size of the devices. But no one's really in that world tying it back together with the volume of data that they're going to create and then applying the right algorithms to solve the problems against that data set. It feels like these two worlds are a bit disconnected at the moment, right?
I think it's also from a sort of organization perspective. I was chatting to one of my buddies about it as well, and we said, can we sort of simulate a human given all the data we've given away to Google and every other provider, Facebook, every platform or service we use, and it possibly could happen if they shared data, but they won't. So Google has a lot of very specific data on you. They probably have the most. But there's specific data that maybe Facebook has that
you combine it
and
then think about the banking data, right? I work in a bank now, and the amount of data they sit on, the problem is the accessibility of that data to be able to do something with it. But they, and I remember, like, you know, we used to dream of having bank data, but when you're in the bank, you can't get the bank data to work for you. So you're in these dilemmas, but you're right, the amount of data.
So something that Rochelle said now, there's a TV series called Black Mirror, and in one of the episodes.
There we go.
Second time in an episode,
we've heard this. Great.
There's this particular person who dies, and the whole concept is like they're able to recreate him and his personality through his Facebook posts and Twitter feed and so forth. And then the question that kind of I was asking myself and what freaked me out is, what kind of personality would it make of me? Because generally speaking, you're only really posting your highlights. Like, I love this steak. Yeah, I love this. And it's not really going to pick up the bad parts about yourself or,
you hate tomatoes.
Exactly. That kind of stuff.
Or just the seeds.
But it was super interesting to think about what data we're actually outputting about ourselves and then hiding away.
Yeah. That show is great. I think what's really cool about it is it's highlighting the social impacts of technology. And they set it in a sort of scene that it's being adopted by the world. So this technology has been adopted, and it focuses on a specific person's life and their situation, which really hits hard and makes you sort of think about yourself and the tech you're using and, what's going to happen.
Didn't he do something about his Gmail? They were going to compile and sell his Gmail.
It was like an upgrade package. So we'll scan his social media. Yeah. But then we can also scan his email to make his personality more like him. Which is
brilliant. Well, I guess.
Would you ever have to answer an email ever again if that technology existed?
Can you imagine the amount of sarcasm that character would actually have if it actually started using your email or the hidden messages that you put inside there?
What happens when AI goes wrong? So say we rely heavily on this thing. I mean, I'm not saying you guys have done anything wrong, but let's push it to the future.
Didn't Microsoft get stuck with something like that
chatbot on Twitter.
Yes, the chatbot that went
racist?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. And sexist and most.
And it just exposed the pure kind of vulgarity of it's the like internet.
The Maslow or the fastest thing. Have you seen the Heart of Darkness? That book. Oh, sorry, never mind. I read books occasionally.
Yeah. What is that? Is that a TV show?
Yes, I am. Is that on Netflix? For Will Green. No, but basically Apocalypse Now, when the guy realizes I don't know what the context is anymore, but basically, you think you've got one place and you're like, never mind, I've lost the train of thought. AI gone wrong. It's exactly that. It's just basically like we've gone too far into it to realize that it's too late to turn back. And it's like, shit.
Well, it is a concern. And guys like Elon Musk and
Bill Clinton.
We're doing this a lot. If only we had our invisible telescope.
President Reagan.
Marilyn Monroe. Sounds like
anyways.
Zuma.
Stephen King.
No, so they're trying to form a committee that sort of controls and regulates the uses of artificial intelligence.
Is that part of the singularity play? Because I know Singularity University, their purpose is to try educate corporates around the world around that moral bar, right?
This responsibility.
How far are we going to take it? Yeah. And if we do take it that far, what is the impact on society? Is it good? Is it bad? Does it take us over? Do we end up working together? And I heard an interesting view the other day where someone was saying he reckons the view of a singularity is that we will work together. So he uses the example of humans have always evolved tool sets. And then when you innovate on that piece of tool set, like a hoe, and I'm not talking about
what
Mike's wife.
I was like, come on, Brett. Oh, Mike, you really got to be here, man.
Yeah, you really got to be here. Philippa, I'm so sorry.
It's always awkward.
So
you got dinner with him tonight, don't you? So you're talking about a hoe, an agricultural tool,
right,
yeah?
And so what a hoe does is it makes it easier to be able to plow, right? And you've got these... And it does it by penetrating the soil.
Sorry.
Wow. Oh, wow. Where's this going?
I anyway, enjoy these things, but I have nothing right now.
I have nothing.
I'm embarrassed for our guests.
So sorry, guys. So... what his view is that artificial intelligence and robotics is actually a tool that's going to help us think better. So we'll have these challenges.
An enhancement, a mind amplification
an
tool.
An amplification. You know what? I need to solve this really difficult problem.
You could have got there without the hoe.
Like, how do we recreate a black hole?
Whoa, we don't want to.
Yeah, but let's just think about it, right? It's very difficult to solve that just with a bunch of scientists.
So you're saying we don't have to because
we don't have to. We can use our even more intelligent partner to be able to help solve these kind of problems, for instance.
And the output of that clever partner will be, yes, if I create this black hole, then all the humans are gone and I'm okay.
Maybe we'll change that. Maybe we'll just redefine the home.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what it comes down to, in my opinion, sort of intentions, human intentions. Yeah. You will get malicious people, and you will get people that use technology for good.
Mm.
And I think it comes down to that. I mean,
but what if you get malicious AI now? I mean, we just spoke about this AI that became racist.
The personality of an AI, right?
What if we're able to curb human nature in the future?
I think that's the point of trying to sort of regulate it.
Yes, and I think it's
important to determine what are the consequences of this piece of technology. Let's say we build something for the military. Could this thing, you know, go rogue? Okay, evaluate that risk.
I think the fact that we can ask that questions means that it probably would.
Or what happens if we build it for the military and it's a bitch? And it sits there swaggering its hips. Did it break you again?
I'm still trying to figure out where the hoe fits in this.
No, but what I'm saying is like, so it's going to end up developing different personalities. So you've said, listen, I'm building you to do, you're going to be a soldier.
What if it becomes sarcastic?
You're going to be a soldier. And it becomes a sarcastic, bitchy AI that says, screw you, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts, right?
I have other things to do than deal with you.
Well, think about it this way. Like, we want to think about AI as something that's human-like, but...
it doesn't get a headache.
What does it solve for us? It doesn't really do much, right?
But then you need to ask the question, right? The people that are supposed to be looking after where AI is going, they're not really inclusive of the entire population. They're really, really smart people. So you're actually going to be influencing where AI is going based off of a bunch of people. You're not really inclusive. And I like that kind of bugs me.
It bugs me now.
Jeez,
I was doing well up until then.
That broke me in another way.
Well done, dude. That's a great thought. It really is. I mean, and that's the thing. So there's this idea. So there's this regulatory body that I think is important for things like the development of AI.
MPA.
Most probably.
Okay.
Yes. We need AI. We're going to be replaced, hopefully, by a really good AI.
Hopefully you'll have a better guest. I mean, co-host.
No, but like, there's this idea of who makes up this body of regulatory humans. And is it inclusive or is it the Illuminati? Heaven forbid, is it Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma with Bob Mugabe on the side saying, do you know what? We're pretty clever and we have nothing else to do.
Well, the guy who wrote Sapiens, what's his name?
Harari?
Harari, whatever his name is. So he's recently been interviewed on TED by Chris Anderson. And what he talks about is kind of where's this all going and how you're going to re-govern these plays. And we're talking about a governance that should really be acting at a global level, not a national level. Because why do you want this kind of governance maybe being governed by the Americans or being governed by the British or the Chinese? And it's such a big problem that we should be looking at these globalized governance that still enables the multicultural kind of synergies. And I guess when you start looking at America, for instance, it really is Silicon Valley when it comes to AI. And Silicon Valley is probably one of the least diversified environments, and they're running with the pink drives. They've got to get more ladies because it's all Indian guys, Chinese guys, and white guys, and a handful of ladies.
That's kind of like our show, though. I mean,
we struggle to get ladies.
We're not
on board,
trying to like say no, ladies. Like, if you are a lady and you're listening to the show, thank you so much. Please come join us and tell us what you think. But it really is this male-centered, technology-driven world. And to be honest, we're all high LSMs. If we're going to go with an LSM model, which I don't think we're favorable
on. I feel
like
punching you right now.
Yeah. There are people that traditionally believe in these things. Yeah. And that will be a measure that AI will consider in the future. Because flawed as it may be, AI is going to go, oh, the lifestyle standards measures. Yes, that must be true because they made it and they lived with it for so long.
Yeah. It will learn from us and our data.
So it'll take all of our good things and all of our bad things.
Yeah. And it's very hard to distinguish what you allow something to learn from and what you don't.
And hence, the AI could grow up to be a bitch.
Possibly.
Or Buddhist. Right?
Or Buddhist. Or could be amazing. Or could be just a real idiot.
Or it could perhaps see things a lot differently to the way we do.
And we can't even realize that we're not actually adding value. Right.
And, you know, maybe, as I said, it could be something we don't understand.
Yeah.
We don't understand how it works and why it does things.
Is Brett Loebscher artificial intelligence?
I think he is. He's too
clever. I mean, that just blew my mind away.
He did.
So
you guys are also blowing my mind
away. You've just kind of proved to me that Brett Loebscher is artificial intelligence.
He's a cyborg.
Okay, that's awesome. That's good to know.
I have a question then. Okay, so there's two things. One thing I've heard is AI will be the last thing that we ever need to create or invent because it will start to create all things past us.
Possibly.
Okay, so it's not me.
I read somewhere that AI is like the fastest growing science currently because you can't
it's growing
really,
itself.
You can't really kind of like put your name or stamp on other kind of sciences. But in the AI space, you could still say, well, I'm the person that actually developed this algorithm or I came up with this concept. So it's one of the fastest growing sciences because people are looking at stuff that's undiscovered. You know, everything else, people know how gravity works. People understand how fruit grows in a tree, that kind of thing.
But you guys are helping that type of knowledge and search through things like the hackathon and the dev day. So, but how? What are you doing? Like, what is the premise of a hackathon when you guys run?
Actually, have you ever been to a hackathon? I've been to a couple.
Yeah.
And I've been to some bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to have a purpose.
I think you've got to be very, very clear on what you're trying to achieve.
Yes.
So I'd love to understand that. Like, what do you got? I mean, this is you guys contributing back into the community to figure stuff out, right?
I'll give you a quick brief overview of what you guys are talking about. We have something called the Intellect Challenge. It was originally born out of an idea a couple of years ago where software engineers could, you know, sink their creative teeth into some sort of challenge or something that's outside of their day-to-day kind of like coding skills. And the idea is that you actually build a bot. So for those of you who don't know what a bot is that are listening to the show, it's if you're playing Pac-Man, you're controlling the Pac-Man character, and then the ghosts are moving around trying to obviously kill you. Mm. So the concept of this challenge is that you need to create these bots that are then challenging each other in some sort of retro game. And what it's eventually gotten to is we started to target unintentionally, we started targeting the AI kind of space because people started understanding like, okay, cool, we can actually start trying out AI algorithms.
Because they can start learning, right?
To better our
the bot to learn.
Correct.
So how are you going to judge that? I mean, is there going to be a winner?
There's actually like a tournament that we run over the entire year. So the idea is that you would build this bot and then in previous years, we had the competition would open up in the beginning of the year, and then at the end of the year, we would run like a full-on double elimination tournament, and then we would host our finals at Rage, where the bots actually challenged each other.
I was going to say, do you let the bots go for the bots?
Yes. That's the entire concept.
That's my bot versus your bot.
Awesome.
So at South by Southwest, apparently, they had the OK Google and Amazon.
Oh, that discussion.
And they had a 4-day contextual conversation without repeating themselves.
I mean, that's nuts.
That's got to be a great sign that your AI is actually doing something. I mean, what happens when AI disconnects? Is it still able to learn? Like, if it's not connected to the web, we're not picking up context. Am I still able to, like, in myself?
Yeah, because...
Well, hopefully it never says learn, in myself. Right? It never becomes self-aware.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tony.
But is that like the dream goal for these guys at the hackathon? Are they looking for this self-sufficient piece of code that starts to think beyond where it is now?
I think that, you know, in truth, that's kind of like the utopian kind of idea.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're just trying to demystify the whole concept of AI and obviously get the community involved in it. Because one of the most daunting things for a software engineer is like, let's do some AI.
Mm.
And they're like, well, I don't know where to start. I don't know how to do anything. And this entire challenge is meant to build up the community from that kind of aspect and say, AI is not really all that hard. Like, let's just... get coding, let's talk to each other. And that's the idea of the different hackathons that we have during the year. It's guys that want to compete in this particular challenge can meet up and they can talk about their ideas and they can start saying, this is how I'm actually employing this particular algorithm to solve the problem of killing you in my game.
And is it individual kind of setups? Would you do it as teams? Do it at your offices?
Currently, it's individuals, but we do have this concept of like clan wars. So a couple of guys can build bots together, and then they're challenging other guys in a clan war kind of format. So
are we not teaching AI to be aggressive?
No.
Remember I spoke about narrow intelligence and general intelligence. Yeah. This is very narrow intelligence. Yeah.
This is happening now, so that must happen later. Is that too dumbed down?
It's sort of... So Tomislav mentioned the games, the retro games. So this year, it's Battleships. Okay, but if I give you a brief history, we've had Pac-Man. We've had Tron. We've had Battle Tanks.
And then Bomberman.
Bomberman. So if you think about this, these are all fun retro games that you remember from back in the day.
Yeah.
And the goal is to create a sort of fun environment for the guys to play in.
That's cool.
But still learning something and working on something different to your day-to-day banking app or, insurance app.
Curious. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but curious. Do you ever have a hackathon or have you thought about having a hackathon where it's optimize this? Don't attack this, but who can optimize this the best?
I think people are competitive. So they're more drawn to sort of competitive like hackathons.
Yeah.
Mm.
However, at the AI meetup, we do have exercises like that. Okay. So it's a monthly meetup and consists of a mini hackathon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a 2-hour long exercise that everyone gets to work on and learn a bit more about some AI concept. And a lot of those are optimization problems. They're not malicious at all.
Yeah.
It's determining password strength based on some data, determining which URLs are possibly malicious.
Yeah.
As opposed to good URLs. So it's things like that. So I wouldn't say that the gamifying it and making it competitive is actually teaching AI to be a bit evil.
That we're aware of. Just saying. I'm in the gray cloud at the moment, guys. I'm sorry.
Hey?
No, but I mean like...
AI can do good.
No, AI is, and by the sounds of things, it's designed that's what it's going to be doing.
Yeah.
It's helping us get to this utopian because everything's going to be a better place because, again, we don't need to be doing mundane tasks. Not because we don't need to, but also we can't really do it any better than a machine could.
Yeah. Mm. There's always room for human error.
Yes. And that's,
I just think of the pilots, right? Being on a plane this morning and I thought about this dude. He's driving a robot because he just presses a button, take off. Presses the button, land.
Let's say, pilots, AI is in the airplane. Now, the airplane's going to have, let's say it's got 100 flights behind it of flawless travel.
Yeah.
Flawless travel. And one Cape Town storm comes in.
Which wasn't really a storm.
They think it was, so we'll give it to them.
It's a fake news.
They haven't had a drop of rain in how long it's a storm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? What's going on here?
But, I mean, a big storm happens.
Yeah.
Now, there is this feeling inside people that I can trust a human. I can trust an experienced person that maybe have seen one or two things. We're relying, and now I'm assuming AI is going to share with other AI. This is the big picture. How does it deal? And then what happens to things like civil aviation authorities when they go and take the black box out and they're like, oh, well, yes, he seemed to have gone quiet there because the AI was working really, really hard. But is there this discrepancy between
faith and trust in a human being that I can see, touch, feel, and choke his throat if he does something wrong, or this unseeable.
Pull the plug problem.
Well, we talk about the problems with religion, that we need to have faith in this unknown, unseen thing that belief and culture dictates. But we're kind of doing the same thing, just in a technical standpoint.
I think that's gonna take some time. So if you look at the self-driving cars, that's a form of intelligence, artificial intelligence. Yeah.
That drives a lot of trust. And
drives a lot of what?
Well, it drives, hopefully. Oh. But it requires a lot of trust that it will drive.
And I mean, that's growing, especially where things like Teslas are freely available, to a point where you must remember that incident where someone was watching Harry Potter in the back while his car was driving and it ended up in an accident. So, and then there's instances like that that make you lose a bit of trust in the technology. But I
was
think
it because he was watching Harry Potter?
Possibly.
Did he forget that he wasn't in a self-driving car?
You're a wizard, Harry.
It was the flying car. Yeah.
So I want to interrupt here. So I kind of have this idea of, like, you're saying what happens when the aeroplane hasn't been exposed to a particular situation.
The learning situation.
And why is it that we can trust in humans? Well, if you think of, like, an 18-month-old kid that's going to pick up a circle and put it through a hole.
It's not
going
to fly me to Cape Town.
Firstly, they've never been taught how to do that, right? So they're, like, figuring things out. And I think the current way that AI is working is all this concept of, like, constantly being taught, and then they'll eventually get to a point where they can understand and do things. So what happens if there's zero data of a storm that's happened in Cape Town, and now you want this plane to actually go and land? I personally wouldn't trust it.
So here's the flip side of that, and I kind of already knew that this was going to be asked when I said it, but all of the planes in all of the world that has encountered every single storm ever is a better guide for knowing how to handle that situation than any human who's never seen those circumstances everywhere.
Yeah, as long as it's seen it, right?
Well, we're assuming that an AI pilot at some point will be a global shared knowledge.
Because AI will really excel because of that neural connectedness of the network, right? Mm. Learning from each other. So you look at those robots that they'll put on a little soccer field, and they literally tell the robots the rules, but they don't show them how to play football.
Do you think that the airplane or the airlines would actually share their data across them for... You know,
I mean,
that's another kind of problem that you're going to get. You're not really going to get to this point because American Airlines might say, artificial intelligence planes are a lot safer than yours. I'm
Do you
share
think,
data
though,
with
that
you.
Maybe GE will, though? They share all the engine data.
20 to 50 years in the future, will we have different airlines? Will we have different suppliers or different retail?
We'll have tubes going.
Yeah, everything will just start. Well, yeah. The boring project.
The tubes.
Hyperloop.
Hyperloop.
Or just portals. You just walk through the phone.
Well, yeah, hopefully by then we just don't need to go on an airplane. It'll be okay.
I think it's also culture, religion, your sort of environment, that all plays a role in who you are as a person.
And how you adopt certain things as well.
And in the decisions you make.
Yeah.
Okay, you're compassionate at times. At other times you might not be where someone else is.
Yeah.
How do you make a computer think that way? Because we can't
to have
quantify
empathy
that.
For the people that are passengers.
We can't quantify it. We can't quantify what your belief system is, really.
And we don't really want to have to try and start to program emotion just yet into AI. We want to try to keep it in that sort of gray box thinking.
Yeah. Well, yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a crazy idea of, I think we make the decisions we do because of, as I mentioned, culture, religion, and, you know, our environment, but also our physical form.
Yeah.
We feel pain. We have a survival instinct.
We're vulnerable.
A computer
to the point.
Doesn't have that. A computer doesn't feel pain.
I love
so
that
if you could, if you could potentially simulate a nervous system within a computer, and when something bad happens to it, it almost simulates our feeling of something bad happens to us, and potentially you could create some sort of emotion within a.
Yeah.
You almost need to have this human analog that is plugged into the AI at every point. If we're going to stay with this airplane thing, that as it lands, the human
I'm
goes.
I'm still thinking about kicking
that's
the robot.
Not good. Bad. Like, everything you just did in that instant, in that scenario, was too hard. Like, I've now compacted my entire spine because of the landing. Thanks. Like, there needs to be some sort of analog that still keeps in touch with humanity. I think as soon as we lose
Well, don't we
control,
connect that to the social networks? How was your landing?
Yes.
Unlike. Yes.
Ooh, the sentiment is bad.
Or your fitness devices. You know, they measure so
Everybody's heart rate spikes. You know something's a little bit up.
Yeah.
That lightning bolt was too close.
I mean, there's someone's heart rate or two people's heart rate spiking at the moment at 37,000 feet.
So, and that's the thing. We're analyzing.
At the back of the cabin.
At the back of the cabin.
We're analyzing AI pilots in their isolation. But AI, in its essence, is not going to be isolated to anyone. It's going to be connected to the heart rate monitors of people, the phone status of social media. And that for me, is the big light. Yeah. The big
and I think it's only going to get there, honestly, if there's opportunity for humans, if we see value in it, if it's something better for us. So would we create, like, a Terminator robot AI? Maybe for military.
The Russians have already made that.
You know?
No, man, not for Russians, for your hackathon.
Start making.
What?
I just think, who would I want to terminate?
Wow.
You're getting deep.
Got dark. Black Mirror, baby. No, but that's. We hope again that AI doesn't have those types of thoughts, where it's like, if only that person didn't exist. Then I could do what I want.
Yeah.
And that's the fear. I think that's
the thought process.
Yeah,
right?
Well, the self-awareness of what it can do.
Something about consciousness, right? And the way we think and how we create our reality, our perception of reality. And how we think. You don't really intentionally know how you think. You just think. And what's a little bit scary is some of Google's AI does that already. So Google Translate.
Yeah.
It can translate between two different languages without an intermediary language that we understand as humans. What this means is that artificial intelligence has created a language that only it understands.
Oh.
And we will never be able to understand.
It's in a thought. That's amazing.
So it can go from Spanish to Japanese.
Oh, it doesn't need any of those languages.
But I'm saying in translation for us, it goes between those languages and does stuff in between that we don't know. You know, we don't know how that works. We don't know what it is.
It's getting freaky.
It is. On that note, I mean, that's a whole other topic that we need to open. And I think I'd love to have you guys back, actually. We spoke on the one show with Mike when you were missing that we want to have this sort of like best of show where we invite people from, like, we had the guy with the physical reboot talking about retail space, and we've had Dr. Craig Nozzle, your man crush, talking about the future of health, and even Wayne Bishop from media, where nanobots were injected into understanding how media served. It'd be great to have you guys to come join us again on like a big group chat and just see how a perspective actually comes out of this, because I think everybody's different perspective, again, in isolation in these shows is great, but I think this best of could be a great concept to have, and we're gonna try it. So we'd love to have you back on the show. Thank you for the time you spent with us so far. I think we've spoken probably more than you have at this point, and I'm sorry that we're the worst hosts on the planet, but I think it's very interesting stuff.
The beer's been pretty good, but it could be better if you get a sponsor.
Oh, boom.
I like you. That's good. But if you are a beer manufacturer, craft or otherwise, give us a shout. At Futurology Show is the Twitter handle, and tweet us up. Is that the right way to say it? Tweet us up on the line.
Are you getting worse? I don't know what's happened. Old age, right?
catch the podcast. If you only just tuned in now, catch this podcast. It'll be available on iTunes. You can subscribe to the Futurology Show. Give us a 5-star rating. We can keep doing this. Keep growing. Keep getting popularity, which is helping.
Thank you,
everybody. And once again, guys, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thanks for having us.
Thank you. You guys are rock stars, man.
Mike, you need to get back in studio. This is the Futurology Show. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.